This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
What is up, everybody? It's a Friday night, which means independent wrestling and independent comics, but not tonight. Tonight, we're flipping the script. It's all about the comics tonight, right, Fred?
Yep. No dick flips from Joey Ryan tonight.
No Joey Ryan dick flips. There's no wrestling on this show. So if you are that comic book purist who has struggled through our show talking about bitch tits and hurricanranas,
right,
this is the show for you.
Well, let's just tell people, when you say bitch tits, we're talking about dudes with tits, boobs.
Yeah, man boobs. We're talking about man boobs.
Right. So, but there is a wrestling comic on the show tonight.
See, you gave it away that we were going to sneak something in through the back door. We were going to sneak that in.
I never sneak anything through the back door, Andrew.
See,
just so you know, I'm not. I mean, I like the Doors. Back Door Man's pretty good song, but that's about as far.
That's
as
about it. Well, because my theory is, you know, it's better to ask for forgiveness than So why were we going to slip that wrestling in just at the end? But we are not going to talk about any AEW or none of that stuff. It's all about the comic books tonight. It is our end of the year, end of 2019 award show. Did we finally decide what we're going to call this award?
No, did we?
Not really. We threw a lot of stuff around, but nothing.
Let's call it the Donut Award.
The Donut Award. Yeah. In honor of Joey, the donuts.
Yeah, because he won't be here, so this is in remembrance of him.
He's done. He's done for the year.
Yeah, he's on a sabbatical. He's hanging out, watching Black Christmas, and doing some other things with his friends.
There you go. Yep. So we're going to talk about our favorite comics at the end of the year. We're going to also first review three comics we really liked the week before. We're not going to review. We don't review.
No, we talk about them.
We talk about comics. Sometimes we recommend them. Yes. And sometimes if they're too emo, I complain about them. But pretty much, we don't review. All right. Well, our first comic of this week is one that's back from the dead for us. It's called Deadeyes Number 3. Deadeyes just wanted to put on a mask, steal from the rich, and give to himself. But now his wife and his wheel man are in the hospital, and the mafia is closing in. Guest starring laughing gas, an MRI machine, some pointy surgical instruments, some soft tissue of some bad men, and a depressed mafia boss. Written by Jerry Dugan. Art by John McCrae. Colors by Mike Spicer. Lettered by Joe Sabino. Published by Image. Formerly known as Dead Rabbit. I hope we don't get sued for saying that. This is Deadeyes Number 3.
Okay. If you guys ever listen to us on Street Level Floppies, you know that I have a fascination with mafia books. And especially when it has to do with the Irish and the Italian. Because, it pulls a little bit at me on both sides. This book is amazing to me. It kind of picks up just where the first two of the original Dead Rabbit book stopped. I never read the first two of Deadeyes because I read Dead Rabbit, and I didn't have a issue picking up at 3. I really like this book a lot. It's a lot of fun. It has a lot of good humor, Dugan's humor. If you ever read his book Analog, it's very similar dialogue, things like that. He really catches the vibe of like the Boston area. The Irish-Italian thing, the north side is the Italian, the south side is mainly like Irish people. So, and he captures that vibe. I think that's right. Hopefully, if I'm wrong, DJ or Dr. Joe will, help me with that because those guys are from that area. But yeah, man, and with my son Anthony, we spend a lot of time in the hospital And this is a Dugan captures the hospital vibe, man. Like, they are leeches, they are bloodsuckers. He captures all that. Yeah. You know, you don't have the money. You find a sick guy out in the hallway. He's, like, on a stretcher. He's just hanging there. Meanwhile, this lady's in there complaining that she can't give the Wi-Fi password because, you know, she's got a premium thing and stuff. And they're not turning on stuff for people. I mean, total hospital. It's not. Hospitals have changed over the years. Maybe I'm getting old and grumpy about this stuff, but I've seen, like, it used to be like about helping people, and now it's more of a business thing, and that's where it falls apart for me. But that, you know, that's just a part of this book. Now the fun part of this book is a lot of action, and you know, the solicit mentions a lot of things and a lot of cool parts of this book, like the laughing gas, which was hilarious. Like, Wheels is saying, like, his stitches are coming out and stuff because they're laughing so hard. Things like that. But it was a diversion. So, you know, Dead Eyes could take out some of these Italian dudes, especially, what did he call that one guy? Belly Savalas.
Yeah, Belly Savalas, the bald guy.
Yeah, it was funny because I got that joke because, you know, I'm early 40s. So, like, Teddy Savalas or Kojak, what have you, is the same guy. You know, he was that guy. He looked a lot like him. And he was coming in this room, the MRI room, where he's, you know, he knew that M stood for, like, magnetic and stuff. And, man, it was, I never thought of like that, like, how they, Jerry put together that part. It was great, man. I didn't think that, you know, when they were going in there, I was like, oh, he's going to hit him with the tank or something. But then to see, like, the scaffolds and stuff coming at the guy, I was like, whoa, that was awesome.
That was really cool.
Yeah, this book is really cool, man. I enjoy the book a lot. I want to hear what you have to say. Maybe we can build off of it.
Yeah, I mean, this book is a lot of fun. And like Fred was saying, this book was originally called Dead Rabbit. And so we got two issues of Dead Rabbit, and then they had to rename it, retool it, and now it's back out. And I did buy the first two issues of Dead Eyes because that's where the comic book hobbyist of me kicks in, and I have to have the complete set. But I didn't read them because pretty much they're the same thing. You know, I already have read them. So three was the first time I got back in the series, and I forgot how much fun this series is. And like Fred, the mafia stuff, everybody's raving about the Irishman right now on Netflix, the De Niro, Pacino, Pesci clip. This is right out of that kind of world. You can just imagine these kind of characters in those kind of movies. And while Deadeye is kind of a mythical character more than a realistic character, it still fits. You know, it's like a mobster with a mask, basically. He doesn't have superpowers. And he's just a badass. And he's just doing all this stuff because, like you said, those leeches in the hospital. That part really, like, got to me, too. I was with you. I was like, man, these guys are assholes. That whole thing about you can't have the Wi-Fi. You don't have enough money on your insurance premiums and stuff. I was like, really? But then I thought about, yeah, they would do some shit like that, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Then, you know, another good point is, like, that. The character Deadeyes himself, you know, if you watch Peaky Blinders and stuff, he kind of has a hat like Peaky Blinders, but he has the mask where there's crosses where the eyes are X'd out. And the main thing that I took from this book was that the dialogue between the Italian dude that he captured and he brought with him, and how he, you know, the panels went from there because the Italians think that Deadeyes has stolen all this money. That's what they're going after. And he never did take the money. And for him to find out that, you know, that's what they were coming for him for, and that the money still could be out there. The one guy that he brought with him, he said, you know, he would share with him where it went because he's already on the boss's shit list. And, you know, he knew he was a dead soldier. So he couldn't. If he didn't come back with Deadeyes, like his mask or something, proving that he was a goner or something, he knew that he was going to get whacked. So what he did was he said, you show your face to me and I will tell you where I think it is. And then Deadeyes made a deal with him saying that he would get half to his wife. And I didn't think he was going to shoot him, but he did. And yeah. I was like, whoa, this is so gangster.
I knew he would once he showed his face. He couldn't risk it. once he showed the guy the face, that was it. I go, oh yeah, he's going to shoot this guy. But he's going to keep his promise. I think he's going to keep his promise and make sure the money gets to his wife.
Yeah, and this book is like, it's really good. I'm telling you, like if you, you know, Dugan does a lot of like Marvel stuff currently. But I think his two best books currently are Analog and this book. And Analog is very much like this book, except it has to do with spies and things like that. And I just like reading his books. And I mean, the voice that he gives these characters is really good. And I mean, yeah. He's an Irishman, so he knows what he wants to do with guys.
So I got a question. Is he giving us a happy ending or a kind of ironic, sad ending? Like, when I mean that, it's like, is this a wild goose chase for the supposedly money that's out there? And Deadeyes doesn't find it? Like, what kind of story do you think Duke is going to give us? Or is this the happy ending? He finds the money and he pays his wife's bills off and everything's happy. I'm kind of leaning towards the sad ending.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the sad too, because I've never seen an Irishman happy. So I'm being serious. I mean, I grew up around, you know, grandparents on one side of the family like that. So, you know, they're very down to earth and sarcastic people, but they always, you know, they're sarcastic because nothing ever happens good for them. That's why they say luck of the Irish.
Yeah. I just thought about that when I read it. Like, I wonder if there really is money there. It's just this wild goose chase that he's going to spend the rest of the series looking for this money that doesn't exist. And it eventually is going to just, you know, lead him to where they catch him.
I think if he doesn't find it, I mean, his wife has all these issues with her health, and she means a whole lot to him. Like, if you remember the first issue, it showed how much she meant to him when he would stay home and take care of her. And that, you know, that could turn this whole world upside down. Like, if he loses her in some point at this book, oh shit.
Yeah.
Oh man. I could see this going a whole different direction. So this is, I mean, it's a guy.
John Wick kind of,
Yeah, he truly loves his wife. If you read the first book, you see that he takes care of her and he's home all the time and things like that. And he fakes like he's, you know, doing stuff, but he's not. Man, it's a great book though. I highly suggest it. If you're not reading it, you should be, because it's great. And I'm all for like mob stuff, especially like a Black Donnelly vibe or a Peaky Blinders. I would say this doesn't have so much of Peaky Blinders because it's modern day times, but it's a, what's that one book movie with the two brothers, the brothers from Boondock Saints? Oh
yes, Boondock Saints. Yep.
I could see it taking that kind of turn too, possibly. I don't know. He doesn't have a brother yet that's Irish with him, but
yeah, he doesn't have anyone. And Wheels is done now.
Yeah. Did you notice that is Wheels gay?
I think so.
Yeah,
but I'm not 100% sure. But yeah,
I was like, oh wow. I was like, that guy looks like Vin Diesel. That's hugging him.
Yeah, did you get your Vin Diesel shot in?
Yeah, not a fan, just saying.
Familia.
I'm just saying, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, great book. Definitely recommend it highly. Fred talked about it more than I did. You definitely know he liked it. But this is right in his wheelhouse. This is the crime stuff.
Yeah, and speaking in my wheelhouse, this next book that we're going to do is definitely in my wheelhouse with some historical stuff.
All right. The next one is The Butcher of Paris, number one. In 1944, a swastika flew over Paris. One of the most notorious and prolific serial killers in history turned the occupied city into his personal hunting ground. Under the guise of opportunity and freedom, a killer preys on those desperate to flee. Until a gruesome discovery alerts the police in the city on the brink of war, the hunt for the serial killer begins as French detectives race to catch the villain before the Nazis beat him to it. The Butcher of Paris is a historical true crime thriller about a killer wanted by both the Nazis and the Allied forces for the death of nearly 200 victims. Written by Stephanie Phillips. Art by Dean Coates. Colors by Jason Wordy. Letters by Tony Pateri. Published by Dark Horse. The Butcher of Paris.
Okay. As a kid, my love with reading started with like historical fiction books. I remember like it was yesterday. It was a book called Gettysburg, the Tad Lincoln Story, and it was a book about Abraham with his son Tad, and Tad, things like the Civil War and things like the Gettysburg Address told through Tad's eyes. And since then, I've been fascinated with books, that are historical, either fiction or nonfiction. Currently, I read other things besides comics, and currently I'm reading a historical book that's by Howard Zinn called The Indigenous People's History of the United States, because that's these things interest me. So when I heard that Stephanie Phillips was writing a book about Marcel Pouchot, and I knew who he was because I live in a very Jewish neighborhood. Matter of fact, outside my neighborhood is a Holocaust museum. I almost said holistic museum. That's something totally different. A Holocaust museum, and I've seen things about Marcel in there and how he murdered, 60 to 200 people. It's claimed to be over time, and he was a monster. Marcel was a monster. It goes back in time that he would give abortions to women that didn't want abortions. He would like prescribe narcotics to many people that didn't need things. He was just like a demon. And he kind of capitalized on this point where Germany was in charge of France. They were policing the area. So he was having at it. Just doing whatever he did because, I think I even believe that I might be wrong, but I believe that he was a mayor of one time in that area, and something happened in corruption wise too. So he's got like a rap sheet. But, in this book, you don't really know who or what he does, but if you do the research on Marcel, people during that time, I know, have you knew over the time, like World War I and World War II, like even in, like Mexico, Argentina, like they would hide people away, like Nazis and things like that, right? You heard about that. Okay, so his big scam was that he could get people out of France and get them to Argentina, but what they had to do was get inoculated. Which like vaccines to like because they want to prevent, he said, to prevent diseases in Argentina, but in his syringes he would give people cyanide.
There's that scene, that piece of art where he opens the drawer and it's full of syringes.
And he gives cyanide to these people, and then he would take their belongings, and then he would dismember them. It's said that he used to take their parts and just throw them into, I think, a lake originally. But then they found out, as we get to the last panel of this book, he incinerated a bunch of parts. And when the police showed up, like this book, there was like parts of 23 bodies, as said to say at the court case, when it took place.
Yeah, the comic set it up in a way that the place he was at caught on fire, so maybe he was just burning too much stuff and he.
The story is so well told. Like you can tell, like Stephanie did like a lot of research on this stuff, and like she gets you like wrapped up into the Dreyfus character, and Dreyfus is a real character. In the beginning, you didn't know, you kind of think like all the Nazis are like the bad guys, starting into the book, right? That's the feeling you get. You're like, oh fuck, here's Nazis. Great, this is the kind of fucking book I'm gonna read is like about Nazis. But then you start seeing that a few pages back, like there's briberies with Dreyfus, his wife, and they're like, you're gonna do this, and you're gonna find this person because the Nazis are trying to catch him, because they hate him as much as the police do. Because when you meet the detectives, they're trying to figure out how these people are dying, but there's only little circular incisions on them, and they're like looking at forces of like wrenches and things like that. And they haven't quite figured it out yet. But to go to the art of Marcel Pouchot, and that's my French coming out, 5 years of it. you know, kid plays hockey, I got to learn
French
to cover it up. This guy that they drew in here looks exactly like the mugshots I've seen of him. And it's creepy. And he has the same look, a sadistic look on his face. And he's got his hands laid together like he's thinking like Mr. Burns, like excellent, like he's plotting something. And she's caught all this stuff. Like, they've done so much research on this. And even from, like, when Dreyfus meets him later on in the book, and they go to the scene where the lady's cooking and she chops down, they never see Dreyfus anymore. And it's told that he never appeared anymore. So he was taken out.
Yep.
But they don't lead to it in the book. As a matter of fact, they go to the end where they go to the basement after they find the body parts and things like that. And the last thing is said in French. It says, my God. And it, to think about it, you know, I grew up in that time where Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, I was, I think, middle school when he was caught. That's the same type of shit that happened to here.
This guy's described a little more Bundy-esque, too. Like, Bundy, like, in her letter at the end of the comic, she talks about how she had people would go to the courtroom and were fascinated by him, and he put on a show in the courtroom, and he actually had women that were, like, admirers and wanted to, like, be, you know, date him and be with him and all that stuff, like Ted Bundy did.
Yeah, it's, well, kind of like the book we did last week, The Heartbeats, where that girl, even though she's seen something happen, there's, I forgot what it's called, but they, you know, people find something into, like, that evilness and the power, and they're like, I need to be with him.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
But the, as you mentioned, the essay in the back was, like, very powerful, and the things that Stephanie had said, and the amount of research, if you read what she says, It's a great book, but it's, I'm gonna tell you, this book is not for everyone.
It's
for me, for like history parts and things that I'm into. If you love history and things like that, and you can get past like the Nazis and things like that, then this may be for you. For me, I thought, you know, because I've known of Marcel Bichot and in the area I live in, I know that, you know, there's a lot of history there and things like that. And I wanted to see what she took from it and see how, where this is going to go, because this is, it hits home for like, for me, because a lot of our friends happen to be of Jewish descent and things like that. And it's powerful, man. This is this book and the letter that she pens at the end where she's talking about being complacent and, you know, and being silent and things like that. It's true. It deals with a lot of things with today. But the question I have is, I'm wondering what the book was she was reading that made her want to write this book, because she said, didn't it say that she found in a script, like they mentioned him?
And she then was she reading some history. Yeah. Probably some World War II history, I believe. I can't remember.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, just to take, like, you know, like a little segment or something of a book and just build, like, just something off of it. I was like, wow, I'm a freaking nerd. And that's some nerdy shit right there that you could, like, build all that stuff off of. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. But, yeah, I like this book. It's not for everyone. I will say that, because a lot of people might be turned off by, like, Nazis, you know. But for me, I'm all for this story and the art. I really feel like, did you feel like the art was patterned towards the 40s?
A bit, yeah, a bit. I mean, I see it. It's, yeah, I mean, there, I don't know if necessarily it's the art style or just the choices of how everyone was dressed and, you know, the architecture. They did a good job, whoever drew it, to do their research to make it feel like Paris during World War II. The way people were dressed, the Nazi uniforms, that type of stuff. Yeah, they did a good job of that. You know, a lot of the Nazi officers are blonde hair. You know, just things that you would think. The men do look, the other people look very French. I mean, just very well done of capturing real life versus, you know, fantasy in a sense that you get from a lot of comics, like, or caricatures, or, you know what I mean? Just really, they feel like real people. It feels like this is real. Like you said, this is a historical comic. There's no doubt about it. And I'm usually a huge fan of historical comics. But where my snag was, like what you've been saying, is, man, I am not really comfortable with a lot of the Nazi stuff. And it's not because it shouldn't be talked about. It makes my skin crawl. It really does. It elicits a very, ugh, like you want to vomit kind of thing, you know, just a very tangible feeling of dread and depression. And I was like, oh my God. And I didn't really, like you, get into, because I didn't know anything about it. So I couldn't like latch onto, okay, this is a horror story about this guy. I went into it thinking, okay, the Butcher of Paris is one of these Nazi officers. That's how I was reading the book, not knowing. Mm-hmm. It's one of these Nazi officers. And I'm going to see some stuff that these Nazis did to people that's just going to, it's going to be too much. It's going to be overwhelming, and I'm probably not going to read number two. I was like already kind of like, ooh, this is. And then, like you said, it flipped it. And all of a sudden there was this murder, and I'm like, what the hell? And again, me knowing nothing, that there's this real life mass murder or anything, I was just like, well, that's weird. What the hell is this? And then I read the letter, and the letter is amazing, but I almost kind of wish I didn't read the letter, because then it spoiled it for me. Because I would still be going in not knowing what's coming. And now I kind of have a roadmap of what's coming. You know what I mean? Because this is a real person. And like you, right, know, you talked about, so I know the roadmap that's coming. And he's not going to get away with it, and they're going to catch him, and just some certain things I know. But it's still going to be interesting to see how it plays out, and I'm probably going to come back to it because it's more about that. It's a very horrific, fictional history kind of thing. You know what I mean? So there's a little bit of fiction, but mostly real.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, she's only did a few comic books thus far, and they're all... Like, the ones that I've read is Aftershock had done a book, Descendants. She did, and that was based on some historical things were placed into that book. She has another Aftershock coming out that I think it's, but I could be wrong, but I thought it was supposed to be about the first ever woman spy. I might be wrong, but there's other things that happen to it. Something with time travel. I seen a little bit of it, but I'm definitely going to get it because it's Aftershock, and I really dig her style of writing, because Descendant, for me, was really good. And I can tell that that's something that she's into, is like history things.
History. She's definitely a history buff.
Like, yeah, and then, so that's, you know, that's the type of stuff that I can get to. Like, I know that you like to, you're into like magic dogs and shit like that.
Hey, I like history. I'm reading a lot of historical fiction that you're not reading. Like, I read Mary Shelley's The Frankenstein one.
That's true.
I read a lot of that stuff, actually. So,
but you still like magical
this
dogs.
One, again, it's not the fact that it's just, I do like dogs. Leave the dogs alone.
Yeah. But schnauzers?
It was the persecution of the Nazis, and knowing that, you know, they're going to kill a lot of these people just because they're Jewish. It's just, I was like, no, I'm really not in the mood to read this. And her letter talks about, you know, we've got to face that stuff is coming back around right now.
It's true.
And it's important to be aware of it. And that's not like I'm shunning it, I'm not aware of it, and I'm keeping abreast of it in real life. But it's just, again, it's just, oof, it was kind of, ooh. But,
I was going to say that, you know, it's not, some things, like, people don't want to see it and things like that. And I respect that. But then there's other people that, you know, they want to see it because they want to see how things happen or what caused it and many things. Like, there's, you know, and that's what makes us all different. But you can say that, I mean, you did like the book.
Yes, I did. This is an outstanding book. So it really gave me an emotional jolt in a negative way. And that doesn't make something a bad book.
Right.
Making me being disturbed is still a quality book. The art and the way it was told and the way the characters reacted, that's quality. It elicited a reaction from me.
Right, and that's why I brought up at the beginning of this was that I started reading like the book of the Howard Zinn books about indigenous people of the United States of America, because there's a lot of things that people don't know that, you know, happened to people, like the natives and things, like they did, their hands were sliced off and stuff for their gold and the turquoise and things like that, that history doesn't tell you about. Oh. And it puts you through that. And some people don't want to, you know, read that, and they want to, like, don't want it. And other people want to know, you know, what it was like. And I'm one of those people that want to know, because I want to learn that, you know, basically that we're lied to a lot. And I don't like the lying part.
Well, but, you know, the old saying, history's written by the winners, you know, so.
Right.
So they're going to tell you the story that makes them look like they were in the right all the time. And
right. Yeah. But yeah, man, I mean, Dark Horse is putting out some good books. Stephanie's putting out some good books. Winner of the Top Cow. I think writer, what was it called? Something where you tried out for, like, writers. She won it. Top Cow. I forgot what it was called.
I don't know.
Anyway, she won, like, the... She was the Top Cow writer. She won, writer of the year, you know, of the contest. No, she won the contest to get, like, a book or something like that. A new, like that thing that Martin was doing.
Uh-huh.
Like, he was putting it in for, she actually won it.
Gotcha.
But now we got to get Martin to win it, so then we can have, you know, that way, you know, we could say we know somebody.
So, but how many issues is this, do you know?
I'm not sure.
I wonder if this is a six and she wraps it up quickly, or if this is something longer.
Yeah, I don't know, because I do know some other things that I left off about Marcel that I don't want to, like, spoil, that there's some other things that happen, because I don't want to spoil the, in case, you know, his whole life story is put on there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's how I look. That's why I said about reading the letter, though the letter's incredible and it's very insightful and informative. It did kind of describe a little more of Marcel and some of the things that is going to happen. And I'm like, ooh, I wish I didn't know that yet. So, but oh well.
Yeah. It was cool that I got a chance to say, like, something in French, you know, because, like, you pronounced Matthew's name correctly when Matthew, like, that's
Matthew.
how you say it in French. Yes, so because that's how his name's spelled. So yeah, so that's how I got to say Pacho. I can even say other things if you want, like wash the car, lave la voiture, tout le pelcomol.
You sound like. Oh, okay. I'm gonna go off real
like
quick.
Encino,
what's
Man?
Eddie? No, Eddie Izzard. Have you ever? Is that his name?
No.
He's the comedian. He's the British comedian, and he talks about going to France, and he just knows enough sayings because he took, like, a high school class.
Okay.
And so basically he carries a board and a monkey and a dog with him, or I can't remember, or a dog or a cat, just so he can say, like, oh, the monkey's in the tree.
Yeah.
The cat is on the floor and I'm holding a board or something like that. And so he can sit in France and say that, the few phrases he knows. That's what you sound like, because you know how to say, wash the car.
We went after, like, year four of French class, we actually went to France. And let me tell you, the things that we learned in America and French class, they laugh at you in France. So. But it's a beautiful place.
Yeah. You know, that's most countries, actually. When you learn the languages, they're like, ooh, remedial. Yeah, well,
wait till, like Joey was telling my friend Caesar. He was like, Joey, who's teaching you Spanish? And he was like, a Japanese lady. And he started laughing. And then he was like, you know, you're learning Spanish from Spain. We don't speak like that in Mexico. We speak slang. He was like, it's totally different, but whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's liven it up with our next book. The next book will bring the mood a little lighter, a little more fun. As we said, this is our chance to... We're just doing comics today. Wink, wink. Just comics to kind of slip one here. All right. Over the Ropes, number one. Step over the ropes and into 1990s wrestling set in a fictional world. Over the Ropes dives into sports entertainment's biggest era. A young high flyer named Jason Lynn goes off script in a match to win the world title and sets the Southern Territory on fire. As the face-painted wrestler Phoenix, Jason battles between the ropes, are only outperformed by his struggles outside the ring. First dates, crooked promoters, cage matches, factions, and families. No matter what problems smack him with a steel chair, Jason lives by his catchphrase, I Will Rise, written by Jay Sandlin, art by Antoniello Costino, colors by Francesco Segala, letters by Justin Birch, published by Mad Cave Studios, Over the Ropes.
Okay, well, you know, normally we cover comics and wrestling, so this book is going to be so money, as they say in Swingers, because even Jay hits it right in the book. In the beginning of the book, it's in a word, in a, one of the word bubbles, and it says, wrestling is like a religion. You get it or you don't. And that's basically how we live our life on this show, right?
Yeah.
You either get it or you don't. What I'm happy about is, you know, we, before this book came out, we kind of pitched it, and we read this, what, like 2 months ago? Was it 2 months ago?
Was it? I don't think it was two.
Was it a month and a half?
Maybe about a month and a half or so ago. Yeah. So this is our second time talking about it, but now we can talk about it.
Yeah, we can actually talk about what happened and things like that. And my first question for you is, do you think the main character, when he becomes Phoenix, of course, is he inspired of Sting?
He looks a little like Sting, and I know that Jay is a WCW guy, so
yeah. Yeah, he reminds me a lot of Sting, and then like the eye, like the paint around his eyes is like mm-hmm. the Phoenix. But I was wondering if Jay has a little, you know, infatuation with, like, say, the Road Warriors as well, because that's what it reminded me of as well.
The Road Warriors. He has a little vampiro look to him a little.
Oh, bit. Oh yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
with
yeah.
a pale face, the long hair.
Yeah. Maybe he is a vampiro.
Yeah.
And his friend is Mexican. Vampiro That's true. Is big in Mexico.
Yeah, maybe.
Although he's Canadian, but he's big in Mexico.
Yeah, most people don't know that, but we yeah. digress.
because he speaks Spanish so fluently. But okay, so we meet like Ricky Radisson. He's kind of like the main guy. He's the main dude. Like, he's like the Vince McMahon. Or maybe if you watch AEW, he's Cody Rhodes. Or Cody Rhodes' dad.
It's almost like a Vern Gagne or a Jim Crockett. Go real old school there.
Right, but how many of our listeners will know who those people are?
None.
Right. I'll know because, you know, because I remember Vern and Greg Gagne's, you know, and then Greg Gagne worked with Sergeant Slaughter, and they did a thing together and things like that. But I don't know if a lot of people might know no. that stuff. But yeah, like the young Radisson comes out and he's supposed to take out his dad, and eventually you find out he's supposed to get the title. But what happens is the young Radisson, he kind of goes to the diner and stuff, and he likes to run his mouth because, you know, he's hot shit on the ring and stuff. But he gets taken out by, was it a bunch of Marines?
Bunch of Marines, they said. Now, do you think it was that many Marines really beat his ass, or his dad embellished so it didn't make it seem like his son really got his ass kicked by two Marines? Because they said some like ridiculous number, like
didn't they say
eight
seven?
Marines or yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm just glad that
wrestling's
he did
always
get beat
a
up.
Work.
Right. Yeah, I did like that he got beat up because I was rooting for the kid. And what I like is I feel like the kid is taken out of Jay because Jay like he's very passionate about wrestling. Yeah. Like, if he posts about it and talks about it, and you can see the passion in his work here. It's a wrestling book, comic book, written by a wrestling fan. That's for damn sure, because he knows all the words. He knows all the lingo. He knows how to, like, draw you in. Mm-hmm. And what I also like about him is that he's a fan of grunge music, because he mentions that in here, too. And I respect that, because I, too, am a fan of grunge music. But, go ahead.
I just got to say, yeah, the book just hits home for me in so yeah. many ways. Like you said, he knows the lingo and the jargon, but he doesn't present it in a way that he sounds like, you know, what's the term? A smark.
Yeah.
Like he's talking above you like an elitist, and you're like, well, why? You should understand this. Like it's an inside joke. It's spelled out very simply, you know, that this mm-hmm. is kind of like a corrupt business. He kind of brings just enough of that carny element that an independent wrestling promotion would have, you know what yeah. I mean, a small promotion, like, you know, the nepotism,
and pushing like the chicken,
yeah. Chicken. How about that, really fast, considering it's true this happens so much, like Jericho will say something dumb and like the crowd will start chanting it, and then you see like the crowd all chanting like, we love chicken. Mm-hmm. Just because they tell, and it's true, wrestling fans are like that. Yeah. You can tell them that, and like then they start chanting it.
Like a little bit of the bubbly.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. But should we say, like, after the injury happened to his son, the dad called him to the house, and he asked him to basically put wear the mask as this guy. But where we mentioned, what was the kid's name again? Is it Justin? What's his name again?
The main guy is the Phoenix. What's his name? I should know this, but I don't.
Oh, shit.
Jason Lynn.
Yes.
Yeah, Jason Lynn.
Okay, Jason. So he meets like this girl, and you kind of get like a I don't know if it's gonna go with a little love story kind of action, but he meets her. You know, things don't go right because he's pretending to be someone he's not, and she gives him a playlist on a cassette, of course, because that's, you know, the era we're from, grunge music, and you know,
get a mixtape.
Yeah. That was their mixtape. She made the mixtape for him, and she tells him, wants some free advice and stuff, and she basically tells him that, you know, stop pretending who you're not, and that's where he becomes the Phoenix. And he basically shoots on the owner of the wrestling company and kind of takes the shine away and then does some crazy moves that, you know, in the beginning they show him, like, not being able to do certain things, but then he's pulling, like, you know, some 360 move or something. Would you say that's the 450?
Yeah, you know what? He knows how to do the moves because he makes a comment that if him and his buddy, the Luchador, could wrestle the way they wrestled in Mexico, they'd be tearing this place to pieces.
Right.
But they're not allowed to because they can't overshadow. They can't look better than the sun.
So you're saying like this company is like NWA and Jim Cornette's there, and that's some outlaw shit because they don't like those AAA guys,
or they want to push Shane McMahon, you know. So you got to be the Miz and job to him.
Yeah. So, but I mean, he kind of gets in the ring where he takes like the persona of this character, and he kind of like crawls under the ropes and stuff, and he's eating it up. And you know, basically that Radisson guy's all upset, and he said, you just made the biggest mistake in your life. Was it worth it? And what did he say at the back? He said, totally. And then at the end, the last panel you see is he basically, they're calling this guy that looks like the Honky Tonk Man to do something to him. So I think he even says, like, all shook up or something like that. Yep. Like, you know.
Yeah, it's a Honky Tonk Man / Lawler, I felt like, eating a bucket of chicken or something.
Yeah, so it's you know, there's a lot of backstage heat and things like that. So this is totally the things that we're totally into, and I can't wait to see where it goes, man. It's a great book, man. I totally enjoy it. I know even if you don't like wrestling, you're gonna enjoy it, and I know Donuts loves it too. He read it too. Joey did. He doesn't like to read comics unless it's Batman. So this was, you know.
Smart kid.
Well, yeah, but I'm not going to say that. Well, he's not here. So he probably won't even download this one. He's not on it. Freaking jerk.
Yeah, I could gush about this all day because I really felt that it was, like we said before, you know, a wrestling comic for wrestling fans. And it didn't make wrestling feel dumb. There have been other wrestling comics throughout the years, and I've seen, like, they lean in, like, their Undertaker comics, and they lean into the supernatural, and they make Undertaker, like, some, like, supernatural monster with powers. Or Boom has had some WWE comics that are just, they're like a toy commercial. They're not really very well written, and the art's not the best in the world. And this isn't like that. This is a good story set in the world of wrestling. And there's more to it than what's in the ring. They're showing us what's out of the ring. You already have this intrigue. You have the bad guys. You know, it's all set up really well done. And Jay says it maybe on the second or third page when the guy's doing his inner thoughts, our main character, Jason Lynn, about the storytelling. Right. The wrestling is storytelling, and that's what we've said since the beginning when we said, why do wrestling and comics kind of work? Because they both tell stories. And, you know, then there's other similarities, but the biggest one is telling stories. And he's found the sweet spot, and I can't wait to see what's next. I really can't.
Yeah, it's that's the main thing. Like, that's when I came up with, like, you know, I was like, Andrew, we should do a podcast that deals with indie comics and indie wrestling. And the main thing was, if we were going to tell people, the reasoning behind it was because both requires good storytelling. Mm-hmm. And Jay hits it on the head with it in that book. So, you know, he's from the same school that he sees it. I mean, he writes comic books and watches wrestling. So he knows that's the link between them both. Yeah. And that's also why we watch independent stuff, or, you know, like AEW, or why I'm also a fan of WCW, is because it had the storytelling. And I just can't wait to see where this is going, because, man, mm-hmm. this is a well done book, and it's amazing to me. It really is. Like,
so don't be snobs. Don't give me this stuff because you don't like wrestling.
Right, and that's another good point, because remember, he even says in this book, he says, they say wrestling is fake, and he puts it in one of his thought bubbles too, and he said, but so are those TV shows that you can't wait to tune into weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good point, because that shit's fake too.
Iron Man's not real, folks.
Yeah, no.
So yeah, so he spells it all. But yeah, it was awesome. As a wrestling fan, I felt, you know, sometimes they disrespect us. The wrestling guy's the big joke, and there's no jokes in this. This was a really good book. So a lot of fun. Can't wait to see what's next.
That's a great book.
All right. Well, those are our three books for the week. So now we're gonna move on to our end of the year comic book awards. Dun 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 dun. What did we say we call them? The donuts. The donut holes.
The donut holes.
The golden donut hole. So we came up with some categories, and these are all independent comics. So we're not doing the big two. People could argue that Image is like the number three, kind of. But still, they're not as big as the big two. And they're still creator-owned, so we definitely have Image. But these are, we broke down to the best comic we felt in certain genres. We're going to talk about our favorite writer of the year, our favorite artist, colorist, letterist. And then we're going to do maybe the comic book of the year. And maybe a few other things we'll toss out there as we get into this discussion.
Right. And this is our opinions. So if you differ with us, you know, you can hit us up on Twitter and maybe even put your little categories and tell us who you'd vote for.
Yeah.
I respect that. I mean, it's just opinion.
It's just opinions.
Personal taste.
Exactly. You know, Fred and I don't like the same stuff. No. And maybe that's the biggest challenge sometimes, coming up with the three books. Like, somebody said, well, how's that works? Because we don't necessarily like this stuff. I could name like six books that I read religiously that he will not read.
Right, because we're different people. I mean.
Yeah. And he's like, that's okay, I guess, but it's not for me. And I'm the same way. We have different tastes. And unless it's a hot book, well, we should look at this as a hot book. But there's where you might see a little different flavor of our personal tastes, I guess.
Yeah.
Based on like maybe what publishers you see a lot of, or artists or writers or whatever.
Right. You're not going to get Magic Dogs on my list or Hobbits.
No Magic Dogs. You just keep messing with those poor Magic Dogs. It's just not fair.
Or Hobbits.
No Hobbits?
No.
That's disappointing. I thought for sure you had Hobbits.
No.
All right. Well, you know, speaking of Hobbits, it's like you knew. The first category is fantasy comics. So if there was going to be a place to put those Hobbits, this would be the place to put those Hobbits. But you didn't do that, did you?
No, I did not. I actually went with, originally I was going to go with Skyward, but I talk about Skyward an awful lot. But here's a book I truly suggest that somebody check out is Kanto. I think Kanto is a really good book, and it's something that even like your kids could, younger kids could read. It's done well. It's a fantasy book. These little robot dudes and things like that. It's cool. I love Skyward, but I wanted to be a little different because I know throughout the year I talk about Skyward a lot.
Well, it's hard not to.
Right.
That's the other thing about doing these lists. I had a hell of a time because after I do all these lists, then I find out I left something off really good. And
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that book is published by IDW. So just in case if you're looking for it after you hear.
Who writes Canto?
I forgot. I didn't write it. All right. I'm not professional.
Not professional. All right. Well, my fantasy book, I went with excellence. Uh-huh. I guess it could have fallen into the like magic gothic category, but I looked at it as like a fantasy tale. They're kind of modern day urban wizards. Mm-hmm. I just really liked it. It was one of my favorite books of the year. The art, Cary Randolph's art was outstanding in this book. The writing was great. I can't wait for it to come back because basically they finished an arc and then they're on hiatus. And it just felt really like a great, awesome, vast world. And I really enjoyed the characters and yeah, the magic and everything. It's magic though, Fred, but it was a good book.
The only magic I like is Magic Johnson.
We'll see. We'll see if you have any other magic on here. We'll see over then. So the next category is gothic horror.
Yes, that's like gothic or horror. I went with, in this category, I was going to go Gideon Falls. I mean, in that case, I could have picked every Jeff Lemire book and just filled this out and just called it a day. But instead, I took the different approach and I chose Ice Cream Man. It's one of my favorite books. I really enjoyed Martin Marazzo's art. I think it's tremendous, to say the least. And each book is kind of like a one-shot in a way. So you don't have to, you know, read the previous issues to get into it.
Yeah, that's a great book. So I guess basically you're saying I'm lazy because I did go with Gideon Falls. And I did go with Jeff Lemire. I just, in the end, I still feel it's the best. It's one of the best independent comic books or comics, period.
Yeah,
that's put out a year. And I just, Lemire's, Sorrentino's art is outstanding. I mean, this is a great looking book. It's creepy. It makes your skin crawl. And it's just every issue, I'm glued to it. You just can't stop turning the page. And next thing you know, you're done. So, yeah, Gideon Falls is my pick in the horror category. And, you know, this is independent comics. So at the end of all this, you sit back and go, oh, yeah, shit, Ice Cream Man. You know, and things like that. You can't help it. There's so many great horror comic books in the independent genre. Yeah, so.
There are. But this is our opinion.
Exactly. Exactly. So the next category would be crime and drama.
For me, this was an easy one. It could be one of the best books of the year. I'm going to go with Bone Parish.
Good one.
It's an amazing book. Probably one that it could be. It would have been my book of the year, but I had to take it a different route. But it's a great book, great team. The whole team is awesome, just like Skyward. It's adrenaline rush. I don't think there was one bad issue of it. I think every week it could have been like 9 or 10s every week that they came out.
That was an incredible book. And I stayed away from it because I had a feeling you were going that direction. But I also had no problem picking the one I picked. I went with American Carnage. Brian Edward Hills. You know, I think people misunderstood that book early on and thought it was just going to be a political statement, where it was an actual crime drama. You have an undercover cop who's trying to infiltrate this racist organization to find out who murdered an FBI agent. That's the gist of the story. That's the main part. And it was just done so well. It's gritty. It was dark. I mean, you're dealing with some pretty broken people in this. I fell in love with it. And I'm a huge Brian Edward Hill fan. You know, I read pretty much everything he does, whether it's independent. And he's one of the few guys. I added Fallen Angels from Marvel. That's the first Marvel comic I've added in like almost a year. That was a new comic added to my pull. And it's because of him. And you asshole Marvel fanboys didn't support it. And it's going to get canceled. So pretty bummed. But anyway, on a happier note. Let's go to action adventure.
Okay, for me, my favorite action adventure book is Christopher Sabella's Crowded.
Nice.
It's one of the best books out there. It continues, and just like the other books that I mentioned on this list, it's basically a team effort. You can't just say that each book that we've chosen are, you know, it's just based upon writers. It has to be the whole book for me. And for me, Crowded is one of those books that it's can't miss.
There you go. For me, I'm going to go with No One Left to Fight. Aubrey Sitterson. Ah, I loved this book. It was so over the top. It was like a video game on steroids. I just, the colors, just everything. I just had so much fun reading that book, and I'm praying that it comes back. They kind of left it like it can, but it hasn't. No one's really announced if it did do well enough to come back. I just love the hell out of that book. Definitely. If you can find that in trade, pick it up. Buy it hell so yeah. they do some more.
It's a good book. It's a beautiful book.
So next, comedy.
For me, okay, so, you know, this book is funny, but it's also a horror book. And I went with Aftershock's Dark Red.
Nice.
It's a great book. Tim Seeley, it has some really funny stuff in it. Corin Howard's, I believe that's her name, the artist, is got some great artwork that kind of adds to his humor. It's perfect. It's a great book.
Oh, yeah, especially the early issues, man. What's the one? Was it Clem that died? Clem was like a gem of one-liners, man. And, oh, man, there was some good stuff. You're right.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Those first issues had us laughing. I went with something that maybe not everyone's reading. It's called Pretty Violent. And it's basically, it's like if you took the Tiny Toons and you made them rated R and started like, and you got really bloody and gory and like they're just killing people and there's cussing and everything in it. Yeah. That's what Pretty Violent is. And every time I read that comic, I find myself laughing out loud. I wouldn't consider that like in my top 10 comic books of the year, but for a comedy, it's just hilarious.
Isn't the writer is the one from I Hate Fairyland, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Jason Young. Yeah, that book is hilarious. It's this young girl, she's her family are villains, but she wants to be a hero, and she's absolutely the worst at it that you could possibly be. She ends up killing innocent civilians. She doesn't like, you know, you're supposed to capture the villain. You're not supposed to slice the villain in half or punch them so hard their guts come squirting out of their nose, or, you know, and so then she becomes like the other heroes hate her, and she's just really like mouthy. It's just, I love it. I love it. Great comic book. So one more category, science fiction.
Okay, for my science fiction, I'm gonna go with Thumbs. I think Thumbs is a great book. The whole series, is really good, and Hayden Sherman's art is outstanding in this book. Yeah, man, I'm a big fan of that book, and in the beginning I wasn't sure what the direction it was going in, but mm-hmm. then to find out like the Sean Lewis's his whole vision when it came through, like issue to issue, when you read them back to back to back, then you're seeing the complete story. You know, many times we read books and we just forget that it's like one chapter at a time.
Yeah.
And when you read it together, it's outstanding book. It's one of my favorites of the year. It could be possibly my favorite. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, that book is an amazing book. It just doesn't quite, for me, it didn't fit into one category. There was so much going on. But yeah. I take the cop out, you're going to tell me again, because I went Jeff Lemire again. I went Ascender. But in my defense, science fiction is one of my least favorite genres. So there wasn't a lot to choose from on my plate, because most of the stuff that people love in the category, I probably don't like to read, and I'm not going to name or anything and name like trash something, but I'm just not a big sci-fi guy. But I do like Ascender. I see little elements of the Star Wars and just different things that I liked. It's not so hardcore sci-fi. I'm Star Wars, not Star Trek. But yeah, that's mine. And then, you know, Dustin Nguyen, the art.
Again. I'm surprised. Like this, I'm sure people were thinking I was going to pick all Lemire, and look at you.
Yeah, I'm the Lemire guy. See? Fooled you. No, I really do like Ascender, and I just got another issue recently. I don't know if it came out last week or the week before, because my comics have been late lately, my orders. But I'm going to read it tonight. So those are all our categories. But now we're going to get into like our favorite writer and other creators. So who is your favorite writer for 2019?
Okay, originally I was going to go with, you know, Cullen Bunn or Jeff Lemire. But then I started thinking about, you know, a lot of those, both those guys don't just do indie books. So I took a different approach and I went with Michael Morrissey because of Plot, Maul, Wasted Space.
All great comics.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, that was the, you know, it took me a while and I so wanted to say Jeff Lemire, but then I was like, you know, that would be a cop out. Then, but then I started thinking about it and I was like, you know, I like each one of these books and I couldn't fit them in other categories. So how could I shout out, you know, him? And this was my way.
Nice. I like the way you did that. You thought that went through a little better than I did. I just went with my favorite guy. I mean, you know who it is. It's Brian Edward Hill. American Carnage, Angel, Postal Deliverance. All three of those books, I read them as soon as I get them. Totally into his style. And I know he does work. You know, he's got DC and he has Marvel work. But just a huge fan. I'm a big fan. I buy everything. I don't care where he's publishing it. I will buy it from whoever he's working with at that time. I hear he's got a new book. I'm on it.
Same here. Yeah, same here. He's probably one of the best writers for dialogue in general. Like the way that he fleshes out characters in his conversations and things. Like it's so well written. And what impresses me the most about his writing is that it's like screenwriting. It's anything he writes could be on TV.
You know, and thinking back to your pick, Wasted Space surprisingly was not my sci-fi pick, even though that's one of my favorite comics. Because I looked at it and I didn't know how many issues actually came out in 2019 for Wasted Space. Wasted Space took a big break. And I was trying to pick something that really had a lot of issues. When I picked my book, not picking my writer or my artist or anything, but when I actually picked the book, I was like, okay, did they actually have a lot of books? Like even American Carnage, going back to that, two of the comics came out in 2018, but the bulk of the story was 19. So I said, I can take it.
Yeah, I remember we covered it because I was in Indianapolis, I think, for the last issue when we recorded. Mm. So that was a few months ago.
Yeah. So, yeah, the bulk of it, I think it's 9 issues, if I recall. Mm-hmm. So 7 issues are this year. So I thought that qualifies. All right, artist of the year, who you got?
For me, I picked Jonas Scharf for his work on Bone Parish.
Good one.
I've got a special place in my heart for New Orleans. I spent a lot of time there one time before the wife and kids. So that city I love a lot. I'll just say that. And he captures that city.
Very cool. Wonder if he could take, if him and Cullen could go slip into that Shadow Man at Valiant. Just both of them.
That would be so sweet.
Wouldn't that be sweet?
I hope so. They would be perfect for that. Or, I mean, didn't Scharf do, no, that's a different artist. Never mind. Edit it out.
My artist is Stephanie Hans from Die. Most of the other work she's done this year is big too. A lot of Marvel, for example, she's done a lot of Marvel. But Die, I mean, I know people that have like 5 copies of each issue because they've gotten every darn variant, and she's done the bulk of the variants. That book is beautiful.
It
really blew me away, the work she did in it this year.
Yeah, it's on the level of Monstrous for art. That book. I now when you mentioned it, I automatically thought of Monstrous, and I was like, how did I not think of that? It's difficult to write these things.
Yeah, because you can't remember. I mean, I remember if you would have talked to me about my list 3 days ago, it was Andrea Sorrentino from Gideon Falls. He was my top guy. And that's how quickly, if I have to think about it, look at some more comics. And I'm sure if I think about it, look at some more comics, I might change my mind on half these. There's just some really good comics. We're spoiled. There's some really good comics coming out.
It's like if somebody asked us, who is your favorite child?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, today it's...
Exactly. Yeah, but today, yesterday it was this one's a sweetheart.
Right. You know? I mean...
Yeah. Exactly. All right, colorist.
Okay, for me, this was I was between Christian Ward, but then I was like, I went with Fico Oso. I think that's how you say his name.
That's no one left to no fight?
One, yeah, no one left to fight because that was, like, for me, the colors on that book, like the pinks, the blues, the lime greens, things like that, they just jumped out, like, to
holy
me.
Smoke. So, that book's an overload.
Yeah.
Good coloring, yeah. I went with Triona Farrell. She just was on so many books I liked. She was on Crowded. She's on Blackbird, Hit Girl, Vampirella, and she just, the brand new James Bond that dropped, Vita Ayala's James Bond that just dropped last week. She just, these are the books I'm reading, and Crowded and Blackbird are the two that really stand out for me. Just great looking comic books, and her color work is outstanding. Again, she likes the pinks too. There's pinks all over Crowded.
Right. You know what? Her. After I think about that, so did Christian Ward for his on Invisible Kingdom.
Invisible Kingdom, yeah. You're right.
Not Tommy Gunn Killers, but did he color Tommy Gunn?
He colored some of the second story. You know Tommy how it Gunn has that Wizards. Second little story at the back?
Yeah.
He did all the art on the little after story. That comes to every issue.
The frog stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so because he kind of reversed the role. He went from artist and colorist to writer on that book. So yeah,
he's amazing too.
Yeah,
like I said, there's a lot of amazing people. And then you know my artist Stephanie Hans does basically her own coloring with her style. So, all right, letterist of the year.
Okay, for me, I know a lot of people are going to be like, "Oh, he's going to pick Taylor Esposito," but. No, I didn't. I was going to, it's so hard, but then I kind of thought outside the box and I went with Troy Pateri. I like a lot of his books, like even the one we did today, like The Butcher in Paris. He's done Postal, mm-hmm. Cyber Force. He's done Descendant with Stephanie Phillips as well. He did the Kiss book, Freeze, Vindication, books like that, all books I like. And I kind of see a pattern, like, they're all with certain writers, too. Like, he does a lot of Brian Edward Hill books. He does a lot of Stephanie Phillips books. He does a lot of, you know, I see that pattern there. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But I figured, you know, a lot of times people always talk about Hassan Alahu. I don't want to butcher his name.
Alahu.
Yeah, I don't want to butcher his name. But I thought about him, and then I thought about, you know, Ed Dukeshire, guys like that, Simon Boland, things like that. But then I was like, you know, Troy, I see his name on a lot of books, but then I'm like, I'm reading a lot of those books, so I might as well give him the love.
There you go. I went with someone who's on like all my classic like top books. I went with Russ Wooten. He's Deadly Class, The Walking Dead, Monstrous. I just really liked his work. I considered Hayden Sherman. Because Hayden Sherman did the letter work on Thumbs. And I really liked that. I liked the way he did things on Thumbs. But then I thought, man, that's not fair. You know, I should give one of the guys that's like a full-blown letterist some love. You know? But I considered it for a while, Hayden Sherman. But I ended up going with Russ Wooten. That was my pick.
Do we we just have one last
category? Yeah, just one last one. The big one.
Yeah. This one is... For our favorite book of the year, originally I was going to go with Little Bird. I thought that was an outstanding book. But then there was this book that I like every week when it comes out. And it's because I connect with the family that's written in this book. So I'm going with Resonant, D.B. Andre's book, because I connect with that family. We have a lot of you know, kids with different... Anthony has a disability, so does, you know, or some people might say ability. It depends where family you come from, so I don't want to offend anyone. But, you know, with him and then the main character from there, and then the, you know, little brother has breathing issues, it seems like asthma, things like that. Matthew has asthma in our house. So, you know, there's different things, and I feel like I have that connection because they have that bond. Those kids in that family have a bond like my kids do. We're closer together because of these things we face. But it's also kind of like a horror book and things like that. So I was like, I didn't know where to put this book. And I've always said it's in my top five. So there it is. I put it in my top five.
There you go. Makes sense. And I considered it. That was one of those books that when I was done with this list and I remembered, I didn't put resin in anywhere. Son of a... But I didn't feel like doing the list over, so I left it as is. Mine, I went with Skyward. I felt Skyward was the best book. It maybe wasn't the best fantasy book. Like when you break it down to genres, or maybe if you want, you can't say it's necessarily the best horror book or the best action. But as like all together and just looking at what comic book blew my doors from issue to issue and just was so good. And I was just so sad when it was done. It's Skyward. It was for me the book that I had to read and the book that I always highlighted looking back on this year. So that's my number one book.
It's a great book. It's one of the best. I kind of left it off the list.
Yeah, well, I left a couple of good ones off the list too. I left Risen and off the list. I left Vault off the list, to be honest. And if you were to ask me to pick best publisher, I might go with Vault, which was kind of weird considering I don't have a Vault comic on here. You know, it's weird how that works sometimes. You know.
Well, you know, we didn't pick like our favorite publisher. Should we just do that real quick?
Yeah, I'd say Vault. Boom has come on strong. Boom has ended the year, and if they keep it this pace, they might win next year.
Yeah, but I would have to agree with the Vault part too.
But that's it. That's it for our end of the year comic book adventure. We'll be back. We're taking a break. We won't be back till January. We're going to enjoy the holidays, relax.
Catch up on all our books.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, definitely catch up on all the books I need to read. Maybe tool with our format just a touch. Kind of come up with some new ways to keep it fresh, keep it different, so we don't get bored too.
Right. Yeah. Less reviewing, more talking.
Less reviewing, more talking. Yeah.
Yeah. It should be some interesting things going to be happening in the future. So.
Yep. Sounds good. Well, I guess we can sign out now. We don't go to wrestling, which is weird. No. I'm used to saying, let's go wrestle.
I'm so confused. This is so weird. It's Friday the 13th.
Yeah, it's Friday the 13th. I don't even know how we end the show because our tagline doesn't even work for this.
No, it doesn't. let's see. That's all, folks.
That's all, folks. There we go. See you in 2020.